Good day, podcast audience. This is your guy, Kenny Hodge, and this is the podcast that you listen to when you want to hear that information that you hear on this podcast, and
you're not going to hear it
anywhere else. Let's take a moment and talk about the injured employees that are working at Citygate Columbus, Ohio, currently. Like I said, I like to keep you up on relevant issues that are happening right now. If you are an injured employee attempting to recover, I gotta say, it must suck to be you right now. Because the agency you work for seems to go out of their way to make sure that a difficult, more stressful time is being given to you or being placed upon you, and it's really not necessary. I'm going to take a moment and we're going to explore one or two examples of what it is I'm talking about. And then you tell me, do you think my words are hard when I talk about a level of incompetence? Here's a letter that was sent from an implant support person dealing with an injured employee returning back to work, back to full duty. And I'm going to read this verbatim because I'm going to assume it's a canned form. According to the enclosed memorandum of understanding, and they have section 1 bidding A, an employee who is temporarily disabled will be allowed to bid for and be awarded a preferred bid assignment in accordance with the provisions in the various craft articles of the agreement, or where applicable, in accordance with the provisions of a local memorandum of understanding, provided that the employee will be able to fully assume the position within 6 months from the time at which the bid is submitted. Now, again, I believe I just read, if an employee is disabled, has some kind of limitations on him or her, if that employee is a senior bidder, that employee can be awarded that bid. But the employee must do one or two things, and one of those things is provide documentation, medical certification, that you will be able to fully assume the position. But nonetheless, upon receiving that medical certification, you are awarded the bid. Now, I don't want to play with words, but let's not confuse being awarded the bid and being awarded the right to work the job. A little bit of a difference there. But as per this article, or as per this memorandum sent from operations and implant support, I'm going to continue reading. Enclosed is the functional requirements and environmental factors for the position. I have also enclosed the memorandum of understanding, standard position description, and the actual job for which you are being considered. Please take this information to your physician. Your physician will review the standard position description and job information and provide a signed written statement to indicate whether or not you will be able to fully assume the position within 6 months from the date of this letter. If the employee fails to provide such certification, the bid shall be disallowed. As time is critical, I need this information by, let's just say, for the sake of discussion, 5 days. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me at the number listed below, and there is no number. But anyway, understand what I just read, because that was specific instructions given to an injured employee as he attempts to go from a limited duty to a full-time position. Now, based on what was asked of this employee, the employee responded with a note from his doctor that reads hypothetically something like this. Upon review of the above information, job description, the employee will be able to fully assume the duties of this position within 6 months as it pertains to the injuries for which I am providing care. Now, I don't know what more I need to read. I don't know one more sentence. I do not foresee the employee requiring restrictions related to this current injury. Now, if you ask me to bring a certified note or a medical certification stating exactly what that you've asked my physician to have stated, why would you still tell me I can't be awarded that job? See, that's an injustice and that's a deterrent to anybody trying to recover from an injury or go through the rehabilitation process, as it is so, I don't know what Columbus, Ohio is thinking when they attempt to do things of this nature. Don't they see that you're harming morale? And if you speak to the supervisor who the employee is now assigned to, the employee has value that could be utilized and was being utilized before he was informed 3 days later that the bid you thought you had, you're not on. You got to do better. But and let me say this to you. This isn't the first instance of this type, so that I'm aware of. Now, there may be several other instances in that plant in which we work that I'm just not made aware of. But if you are an injured employee and you are attempting to return to work, I can't stress enough that you have to get your union involved, because they have to be there as that voice, letting people like this person in implant support know that you are violating postal rules and regulations. And what you are doing, there should be a monetary and some kind of administrative action taken against you, because apparently this is not the first time this has taken place. Now, I created a situation so that it would allow me to stress upon any injured employee that you're going to need someone to speak or represent you, and that someone's got to be your union, when you attempt to return to work or you have any injuries at work. Because I'm telling you from experience and from what I know, for whatever reason, injury compensation and employees being injured on the job doesn't seem to be high on the list of priorities for Columbus, Ohio, from my humble opinion. So it is important that you understand these rules and regulations and how they protect you, because I'm pretty certain your supervisor is not going to do that, whether they don't have time or they don't have knowledge. I don't think it's going to happen. And one of the reasons I say I don't think it's going to happen, another fictitious story I'll share with you. In the Columbus District, employee at work falls, breaks her wrist at work, not sprain, broke her wrist at work. Did you think they filed a CA-1 for that employee? No. What they did was offer that employee opportunity to resign. These are the type of people I'm telling you about. These are the type of folks I'm talking about. And when I say these are the type of people, I only say that in a hard manner, because it's important that you understand what you're entitled to if you become injured, or if you're injured and now looking to return to the workforce. That's why I stress, and some of my words may be a little harder than they normally are. You know, in the words of my dog, my big dog, DR, riddle me this. They're going to work you a little harder. They might want to call it motivation, but they're going to work you a little harder. They're going to push to get a little more. But if you get injured, then that's a whole different ball game. It's like you don't exist anymore, because now they have to concentrate on pushing the next person until hopefully that doesn't end up in an injury. Does that make sense to anybody? I'm going to take a second and segue right into something I think is very important. And I'm going to address both unions, APWU and the NPMHU in Columbus, Ohio, you have to do a better job at researching and giving members correct information. It's so important because they want to have trust in their union, but if the information that continues to come from union offices is not as per your contract and members are finding this out, you weaken your position as the person or persons in a responsible position that has the authority to negotiate with management. You weaken that when you give bad information to your members. You weaken that when you have stewards who, for whatever reason, a lot of members feel offended talking to. If you are a steward and members don't feel comfortable talking to you, then you need to find another job or another position in the union where you don't have to talk to people, but you can just do research. Because I'm hearing this at work, stewards not being respectful of the membership, stewards training new employees on jobs that they're not supposed to be doing. In other words, training employees across craft. Example, a mail handler steward is showing a probationary employee the duties and responsibilities of a mail handler, of the mail handler craft. And during that process, the steward takes that mail handler to a clerk, to a case, and shows him how to sort mail. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And if the steward is showing that new employee this process, then it's going to be hard to unlearn the process. You know, the first time you learn something, you hope you learn it right. And then most times you learn it right, but unlearning is not an easy process. So to the unions, I say, spend a little more time in your craft. Make sure your information that you're giving to your members is accurate. And present yourself as people-friendly individuals so that your members who pay the dues that pay your salary or your whatever it is you get. That's an inside joke between me and the executive board of Local 304. But respect your craft and be in a position that the craft want to respect you. Now, let's get back to postal management. I'm going to close today's podcast with an explanation on a situation that seems to be brewing inside the Columbus Post Office. And that situation is the unassigned regular. Now, I have to say, I've not seen any language to contradict or to go against my understanding of what an unassigned regular actually is. To put it bluntly, you're like a PTF that's got a start time and set days off. Now, I don't know any other way to simplify that. But what Columbus, Ohio does is they allow that unassigned regular to be included in the benefits. And when I say benefits, I mean the scheduling, the overtime list, the holiday list. They allow that unassigned regular to be included with craft members who have bid jobs in a section. And that's just wrong. That's not what an unassigned regular is, because the way Columbus, Ohio looks at and treats unassigned regulars, that is the exact way they look at and treat employees with bid jobs. And if that's the case, then there would be no title called unassigned regulars. An unassigned regular is a career employee that is guaranteed 40 hours a week based on their schedule. They do not have a work area. All unassigned regulars should be in one pay location. Unassigned regulars should not be considered when you start giving overtime in sections based on the overtime desire list. In Columbus, Ohio, with the with the blessing, I would say, of our unions, you do a misjustice. You're not fair to that unassigned regular. And when you allow that person for so long to think that they are a bid employee in the section in which you consistently assign them to, one or two violations will be taking place. One, it is a direct contradiction to the agreement and the MOUs that came out in March when you started this nonsense about unassigning 100 different employees. Or it's going to be a violation based on you considering unassigned regulars in the movement in and out of units, because again, an unassigned regular should always be the first person moved out of a unit because they don't belong in a unit. Does that make sense? And when you don't explain that to the employees, you allow the employee, with some assistance from people who think they know but don't know, so they get in the ear of this unassigned regular and allow them to, move forward as if they have a bid in a section. And to the mail handlers who like to play that game, you don't know, but you're going to put information out anyway, why don't you stop that? Because all you're doing is creating an uneasy work environment. And to the unassigned regulars, I say, I mean, absolutely zero disrespect. Zero disrespect. I'm just talking contract. An unassigned regular should be, again, in their own pay location. They can be sent to any area at any time of the day. The only requirements when you come down right down to it on an unassigned regular is if you're a mail handler, you can't move their starting times. They must remain in their days off, and they must maintain the same schedule that they worked the first week that they became the unassigned. Now, when it comes down to residual bids with unassigned regulars, there is a vast difference between what the mail handler does and the clerk does, and I'm going to state that difference, and then we're going to end this show. On the mail handler side, if you are unassigned regular, they go in a strict seniority order, when bids become available. So if you are the top unassigned regular as a mail handler, and a residual bid comes out, you do not have to take it, period. You can pass on it, it'll go to the next unassigned regular. There is a pecking order when it comes to the National Postal Mail Handlers Union. Now, a vast difference when it comes to the APWU, they don't have that pecking order. If there are clerk bids and there is an unassigned regular of the same pay grade, management can select any of those unassigned regulars. They do not have to go in a pecking order. So, quick note as I bring this around to a summary. Management, if you would take the time and explain to unassigned regulars exactly what that title means and what it does and what it allows them to do, I think that you would be doing a good thing when it comes to your employees as far as explaining what their position is, and thereby eliminating the unknowing in their ear, giving them false hopes that they are in a rotation, the same as if a person inside of a bid area. There is a difference between a employee with a bid and an unassigned regular, and you need to understand that difference. Hey, this is Kenny Hodge, and this is the podcast. Talk to you when I talk.